Chapter 13, Part 1. The Great Battle of Algonquin Island, or Long Live the Beaver. Thursday morning dawned bright and clear. The campers were up early, nervous and excited about the day ahead, which was due to kick off as soon as John was off the island. How is it that everyone in camp is talking about the competition, and John hasn't even noticed? Mike asked, sitting down across from Rudy at the breakfast table. He had a sudden influx of very urgent paperwork, said Rudy blandly, pouring milk into a glass. Do you think bacon is supposed to be this color?
Shut up, Miller!
Yelled a voice from the kitchen. Mike ignored the interruption. A sudden influx of paperwork, he said, suspiciously. Would you have had something to do with that? Rudy widened his eyes at Mike. Me? How could I have? He said. I really don't think food should move independently on the plate, you know.
Miller! This is your last warning!
Came the same voice from the back. Mike looked at him. I don't know how you do half the things you do, he admitted. But I recognize your evil genius at work when I see it. Rudy looked up from his contemplation of his eggs. Why, thank you, Mike, he said. I'm profoundly moved by your compliment. Mike eyed him. If you steal my toast, I'll profoundly move you to another table, he threatened. At that moment, John stood up in front of the room and announced, Campers! I'll be off island today! In my absence, Chuck Daniels of Cabin 12 will be acting head counselor. The Cabin 12 campers cheered. Mike rolled his eyes. John turned to Chuck.
Walk down to the dock with me, Chuck. I need to talk to you about a couple of things.
He turned to leave with Chuck, and as the door closed behind them, a huge surge of chatter broke out as the rest of the campers eyed Cabins 12 and 13 speculatively. Mike looked down the table at the Cabin 13 campers, fizzing with excitement beside him. Everyone ready? They nodded, looking nervous.
Gabe? Said Mike, suddenly catching sight of the camper.
Yeah? Said Gabe, cheerfully.
Your hair? Said Mike, trying not to laugh. You don't appear to have any left at all.
Aerodynamics, said Gabe, giving him a thumbs-up sign. I did it last night.
Mike looked at Gabe's bald head.
Okay then. Let's go down to the first event, guys.
Reaching down to pick up the last of his toast, he grasped nothing but empty air.
Damn it, Rudy, he shouted after his retreating friend. Why do you always steal my toast?
The chess game was set up in the picnic area. All the tables had been pushed together, and three boards were set out on each. One table, set off to the side a little, was set up with two boards and was intended for the four counselors.
Cabin 13, huddle!
Called Harold over the buzz of the crowd as Mike stepped into the large clearing by the woods. Most of the rest of the campers had come to watch the game and were sitting on the ground, scattered around the tables. Mike joined the other members of Cabin 13 in a tight bunch around Harold.
Everyone, remember what I taught you, he was saying seriously. Don't let your opponent worry you. Concentrate on the game, not the player.
The boys all nodded seriously.
Long live the beaver! Shouted Gabe. Long live the beaver! Yelled all the other boys in response, then clapped and cheered.
Chuck sneered at them from the other side of the clearing.
Places, everyone! Shouted Mark Talbot through the megaphone. Places, please!
The boys all scrambled for their seats.
We have a 40-minute time limit on the game, announced Mark.
Spectators, please keep the volume to a minimum. We'll put the scores on the chalkboard. He waved at a big chalkboard on his right. As games are completed.
He paused and lowered the megaphone as the last of the chess players sat down. After a few moments, he raised it again.
Ready? Then start!
The players all started their clocks and began their games. Mike tried to concentrate on his game with Nick, who was gingerly advancing a pawn on his side of the board, and not look round to the campers or to Chuck's game with Rudy. For a while, there wasn't much noise. A gentle murmur from the watching crowd. The click and tap of pieces moved and checks, clocks struck. The occasional soft exchange amongst players. Suddenly Jimmy jumped to his feet.
Checkmate! He called,
and Mark stepped up to adjudicate.
That's one to Cabin 13, said Mark through the megaphone, and a Cabin 3 camper chalked up the score on the blackboard.
Mike turned around to clap along with the crowd while Nick thought about a move. Jimmy grinned at him and went to watch Harold's game against Joe Thomas.
Check. Said Rudy, softly.
Chuck grumbled and bent his head over the game. A few minutes later, five more games had declared a winner, and the score stood at 4 games to Cabin 12 and 2 to Cabin 13.
Check, said Rudy again, as the applause died down from the 6th declaration. Mike tried to force his attention back to the board and looked at it in dismay. Nick was chasing his last remaining pieces all over the board. Suddenly, he saw an opening. "Checkmate!" he said, as he moved his piece into place, and raised a hand to summon Mark Talbot. "Good game!" he said cheerfully to Nick, offering to shake hands as Mark announced him the winner. To his surprise, Nick smiled back and shook his hand heartily. "Not really," said Harold, at Mike's elbow, looking at their board. "Absolutely horrible, in fact." "Hey," said Mike, "I won, didn't I? How did you do?" Harold pointed at the board, which now read Cabin 12, 4, Cabin 13, 4. "Joe was an interesting player," he said. "I enjoyed our game." "Checkmate," called another voice behind them, and Mike and Harold turned to see Jason, his head in his hands, looking at his board in dismay as his opponent jumped up from his seat. "Check," said Rudy, and Harold turned back to watch his game. The minutes ticked by. Then there was a sudden spate of shouts, and the score stood at 7 games each, with only 3 pairs still playing. Mark Fields was caught up in an epic battle with Adam Taylor. Gay was playing an unorthodox game against a bewildered chess novice, and Rudy and Chuck were still playing at the counselor's table. Most of the spectators were intent on this latter game. "Check," said Rudy. "What's going on?" whispered Mike to Harold as they hovered near the table. Harold shook his head, his eyes wide and confused. "That's the 9th time he's called check. He could have finished the game 14 moves ago." Mike looked at Rudy, sitting indolently at his seat on the picnic table, cool and unconcerned. By contrast, Chuck's face was contorted with the effort of thought, and he was sweating profusely. "If I was Chuck," Harold said, "I'd have conceded 20 moves ago." Chuck, catching this remark, looked up at Harold and scowled. Harold blinked and stepped back. Chuck glanced over at the scoreboard. Suddenly, behind them, Gabe stood up with a shout. "Checkmate!" he shouted. Mike watched as Chuck seemed to grow even more tense. He fumbled with a pawn, advancing it, and then pausing with his finger still on the piece, his brow furrowed. Rudy looked at him and sighed. As soon as Chuck released his piece, Rudy moved his knight. "Check and mate," he said, his tone bored, raising a hand to summon Mark. Just as he did so, Mark Fields stood up as well. "Checkmate!" he said, grinning. Mark Talbot walked quickly from one board to the next and then held up his megaphone. "Gentlemen, this competition is at an end. Our winner is Cabin 13, with 10 wins out of a possible 17. The crowd clapped and cheered, while the Cabin 13 campers danced around and hugged one another. Chuck refused Rudy's politely outstretched hand and stomped away from the clearing just as Mark announced, "That means the competition is currently at 1-0 to Cabin 13. The crowd broke out in cheering and some good-natured booing. "The next event will be the soccer game," Mark continued when the noise died down, "which will be refereed by Cabin 1. Players, please be ready in 1 hour. Spectators, please sit along the west side of the field if you want to watch the game." Boys streamed away from the picnic site, laughing and talking about the chess game. The Cabin 12 campers headed dispiritedly towards their cabin, consoling one another as best they could. "They look pissed," whispered Jimmy, as he and the rest of the Cabin 13 team warmed up on the edge of the soccer field. Mike glanced over. Cabin 12 did look pissed, Chuck most of all. He was standing in the middle of the ball-passing practice Cabin 12 were finishing, barking at them angrily. "Don't worry about them," Mike whispered back. "They'll get over it as soon as the game starts." Jimmy looked doubtful, but ran off to join the huddle of campers that Smith was calling to order towards the center of the pitch. Mike and Rudy jogged over to meet them when he beckoned. "Keep cool," Smith was saying. "If you get stuck, kick the ball out of play, or try to pass it to me or to Jace." The campers all nodded. "Okay," said Smith. "We're golden." "Long live the Beaver!" yelled Gabe. "Long live the Beaver!" everybody yelled back. And Mike and Rudy jogged to the sidelines with the 3 substitutes. Out in the center of the field, the 2 captains shook hands. The whistle blew. "And the game has started," announced an excited camper from Cabin 1 over the megaphone. "Cabin 12 are in early possession. As you all know, Cabin 12 is currently at the head of the camp leaderboard in the soccer tournament, while Cabin 13 are at the very bottom, 4 points adrift of the second lowest team. Cabin 13 is captained by David Smith, who attends school in the Ottawa area. Cabin 12 is captained by John Jones of Kingston, Ontario." Mike tuned out the announcer and kept his eye on the players. Gabe, Smith, and Harold were the 3 strikers. Harold had been the biggest surprise of Smith's new-look soccer team. "He's little," Smith had explained when Mike asked, "but he's quick and he's sneaky. Plus, with all the chess, he has great spatial awareness." Suddenly, there was a flurry of activity,
and Mike was up on his feet as one of the Cabin 12 players made a break toward their goal.
"Catch it, Jason!" he heard all the kids yell as the ball arced slowly through the air towards goal.
Jason jumped up, and the ball deflected harmlessly away from his gloves.
"A great save by the Cabin 13 goalie," the announcer said cheerfully. "Jason is the goalie in the Ontario Under-14s team, but has been playing left wing for Cabin 13 while at camp in order to improve his pace, according to a pre-game interview."
Mike laughed. "Our kids have been giving pre-game interviews?" Rudy raised an eyebrow. As the game went on, Mike cheered and jumped up and down with the campers, while Rudy remained calmly in his seat, occasionally hand-signaling Smith. Chuck, meanwhile, yelled at his team throughout from the sidelines, shouting instructions, praise, and thinly-veiled insults at his player as they ran past. Rudy looked at him with his usual inscrutable expression.
"Chuck reminds me of a trip to Toronto Zoo I went on when I was at school," he said loudly. "There was a special exhibition of howler monkeys."
Mike choked with laughter. The minutes were ticking away towards half-time, and the score was still 0-0. Mike was just starting to relax a little, thinking they had survived the first half without conceding a goal, when suddenly the Cabin 12 captain, Jones, faked out the defender in the midfield and ran towards goal. He drew his boot back, and the ball sailed in the top corner of the net, just past Jason's reaching hands. The crowd went wild. The Cabin 12 players converged on their captain, hugging him and patting him on the head before running back to take their positions. 2 seconds after play resumed, though, the whistle blew, and both teams ran off the field towards the benches. Mike handed out drinks and towels to the sweating boys. "You look good," he told them. "You did well to hold them to one goal." Smith nodded. "We just need to push forward a bit more, guys." The campers nodded, frowning in concentration while Rudy and Smith talked tactics with them. After a few minutes, the whistle blew again, and the campers ran back on the field for the second half.
"Keep going, guys," Mike yelled after them. "You can do it."
A couple of campers turned back and waved, grinning. "And so we start the second half," said the same excitable camper over the megaphone, "with Cabin 12 just edging ahead with one goal. Can they hold on to the lead over the next 30 minutes? For the next 10 minutes, Mike was on a knife edge. Cabin 12 continued to have the best of the chances, but Jason and the other Cabin 13 defenders constantly frustrated them. All of a sudden, though, the tide turned, and Smith was racing down the field, the soccer ball apparently glued to his feet, Harold running with him towards the goal. Caught on the hop, the Cabin 12 defenders tried to keep up, but were outfoxed by Smith. On the edge of the box, he passed to Harold, who lined up to shoot, and... "Foul!" screamed Mike, along with the rest of the crowd. The Cabin 12 defender who had taken Harold down was looking worried, bending down over the small form of Harold huddled on the ground. Smith signaled Mike frantically, who grabbed his first aid kit and ran onto the field.
"I didn't mean to," the Cabin 12 player was saying. "Is he all right?"
Mike knelt down next to Harold. "Hey, Harold," he said gently. "Where do you hurt?"
"My foot," Harold said. "The one I hurt on the leg."
Mike eased Harold's boot and sock off, murmuring comforting nonsense when Harold flinched. The long cut in Harold's foot from the boating accident was bleeding sluggishly.
"That's a yellow card for Gus Wilson of Cabin 12 for that foul," said the announcer, "and a penalty kick to Cabin 13.
Mike assisted Harold from the field as Jimmy rushed on to substitute for him. They turned back just in time to see Smith line up for the penalty. The goalie, terrified, dove right as the ball flew from Smith's feet. The ball slid sweetly into the net on his left. Mike jumped up and down, yelling on the sidelines.
"And that makes the score 1-1, said the announcer.
The game seemed to speed up suddenly, the campers racing from one end of the field to the other. Mike glanced anxiously at his watch. "We must be into injury time," he said, standing up again to look at his campers. The boys all looked tired.
"Not much longer, guys," he called out to them. "Just hang in there."
A moment later, there was some kind of confusion in the midfield, and two of the Cabin 13 players crashed into one another. Seeing an opening, one of the Cabin 12 strikers got possession of the ball and pelted down the field. In the net, Jason readied himself and threw himself down in front of the ball, reaching out for it. As it bounced towards goal, it hit the ground just in front of him, striking an uneven piece of ground and flying over his prone body and into the net behind, just as the final whistle blew.
"No!"
howled the Cabin 13 campers and their supporters. The Cabin 12 campers ran around the pitch, celebrating.
"And Cabin 12 win the game!" screamed the announcer into his megaphone. "With a narrow 2-1 lead! That means at the end of the second competition, the teams are tied! Well done, every... Hey, give that back!"
The deeper, calmer voice of Chris Stevens, the referee, took over.
That concludes the soccer game. The third challenge, the obstacle course, will take place at 2 this afternoon. We will now break for lunch. At the Cabin 13 bench, the team were miserable.
It was a good game, said Smith, unlacing his boots and looking at them sadly. Well played.
Jason had taken his gloves off and was stomping on them. In the last minute, in the last 20 seconds, they get one by me, he howled furiously.
How can I run around the obstacle course with my foot like this? Harold was saying, upset.
Mike grimaced and glanced over at Rudy. Come, come, said Rudy, raising his eyebrows. We can't let a little thing like this minor defeat concern us. Everyone go wash up, consume whatever the kitchen staff are passing off as lunch today, and meet back at the cabin in an hour. The boys smiled weakly and set off slowly back towards the main camp buildings.
Seriously, what do we do now? Whispered Mike,
keeping a close eye on Harold, who was limping with Davies' help towards the nurse's station.
My dear Mike, Rudy said superciliously, we have not yet even begun to fight.
Chapter 13, Part 2. The Great Battle of Algonquin Island, or Long Live the Beaver, Part 2. It was a forlorn gathering in Cabin 13 after lunch. Harold's foot was bandaged up to the point where he could hardly put it into his shoe, and he was limping badly. The other boys were tired and dispirited after the difficult soccer game.
20 seconds, said Jason for the 40th time.
Smith patted him on the arm. You saved a dozen, though, he said consolingly. Some of them were good chances, too. Mike smiled at him. He was sitting on the floor of the main room while Rudy, Jimmy, and Davis conferred about obstacle course strategy in the counselor's room.
It was a good game, guys, he said encouragingly. Think how much better we did than the last time we played them.
Everyone thought about their previous 11-0 defeat by Cabin 12 in the intra-camp soccer competition for a moment, and looked marginally less depressed.
We won the chess pretty convincingly, too, said Mark Fields, cautiously cheerful. At least it's a tie going into the last event.
Mike nodded encouragingly. The campers began to look a little more cheerful.
But the obstacle course, said Harold despairingly, I can't run.
The room was plunged once more into depression.
20 seconds, said Jason again.
Mike was relieved when, a few moments later, the door between the rooms swung open, and Rudy and the two campers stepped out into the main cabin. Rudy was, as always, inscrutable, but Davis and Jimmy were grinning from ear to ear.
This is not the scene of unbridled enthusiasm and energy I was hoping to see, said Rudy, taking in the glum expressions of the silent campers.
They're worried about the obstacle course, said Mike.
Ah, the obstacle course, Rudy said. Fortunately, I have a plan.
Beside him, his co-conspirators were practically bouncing with excitement. The other campers exchanged looks, and slowly smiles spread across the face of all the campers in the room. Mike sighed, watching the ripple effect, as Rudy's cunning achieved what a half an hour of his own patient encouragement had not. Rudy retrieved the chalkboard from the room he shared with Mike and propped it up against the wall.
If I can direct your attention to figure A, said Rudy, pointing at the upper left corner. Now, what I have in mind is...
At 2:10, the obstacle course field was filling up quickly with spectators. Sam and Bob were standing in the middle of the field, directing spectators to the designated seating areas. Cabin 13 marched onto the field en masse, carrying a hastily assembled flag bearing the words, Long Live the Beaver! And an inexpertly drawn picture of a small, toothy mammal.
It looks more like a rabbit than a beaver, said Davis critically.
Do I look like an expert in beaver drawing? Asked Jason, scowling at him.
Do you want to do it? No? Then just hand me that pot of brown paint.
Cabin 12 were already on the field, quietly warming up while Chuck bellowed at them and Nick skulked in the background. Rudy made the Cabin 13 campers form a circle and ran them through some stretching exercises. Sam and Bob walked over to them.
Everything all right? Sam asked, chewing nervously on his moustache.
Jamie lost the toss this morning. Chuck wants his team to go first.
Mike grinned at him. We wanted to go second anyway, he said cheerfully.
Where do you want us to stand while they go?
Over by the finish line, said Sam, pointing. Good luck, guys.
The campers all waved as he and Bob jogged back to the center, and the whole team marched off to the finish line, which was at the top of a short slope. From there, Mike looked out over the course. There were 10 obstacles in total, some easy, like the row of tires pinned to the ground that the boys had to skip through, and some rows of short hurdles. Some were more difficult.
It was a group of tall poles, connected by horizontal ladders that the boys had to hang on to as they swung their way across the intervening space. There was a set of ropes used to swing across a pit of mud. The worst was the very last obstacle, which all the campers called the wall. It was shaped like the letter A, with the steep sides covered in nets to help them climb up and over before they raced up the hill to the finish line. At the far end of the course, Chuck was still yelling at his campers, who were lining up at the starting line. "Gentlemen, we're about to start the obstacle race that will decide today's competition," announced Sam through the megaphone. "The first team up this afternoon will be Cabin 12, including their two counselors, Nick and Chuck." He paused while the spectators cheered. "The only rule is that every person in the race must successfully pass through every obstacle in order and reach the finish line. Bob will be timing both races, and we will record the time it takes from when the whistle blows until the last member crosses the line as the total team time." "Cabin 12, are you ready?" he shouted, turning towards the field. "Yes!" yelled out Cabin 12. "On your marks! Get set!" called Sam over the megaphone, and then blew the whistle as hard as he could. The crowd cheered as Cabin 12 set off from the starting line towards the first obstacle, the hurdles, with Nick and Chuck's longer legs propelling them straight to the front of the pack. The boys streamed over the hurdles and headed towards the next obstacle. Already, though, two of the boys were starting to fall behind while the others surged ahead. The main pack of Cabin 12 hit the fourth obstacle, the rope swing over the mud, in a group. As there were only three ropes, they ended up bunched up on one side while their teammates swung across and then sent the rope back. Meanwhile, up on the seventh obstacle, Nick and Chuck were crawling under the knee-high nets that had been placed across two tunnels made of railway sleepers. Other campers were still swinging across the metal ladders back at the third obstacle. One camper in particular kept falling and having to go back to the start. The crowd cheered and roared as the race progressed, with just a nervous oasis of calm around the waiting Cabin 13 team. Some of the campers had set their own stopwatches going at the start of the race to keep track of Cabin 12's time. 4 minutes, whispered Davis to Jimmy. They're ahead of where we plan to be at this point. Jimmy nodded and frowned in thought. Chuck and Nick, still miles ahead of the rest of the group, had just arrived at the wall and were swarming over the top and down the other side in seconds. They broke into a sprint for the last few yards up the hill to the finish line, where the waiting spectators cheered their arrival. Back on the obstacle course, the Cabin 12 team was spread out over a large number of obstacles. As soon as he had been marked on a chalkboard as having crossed the line, Chuck ran back from the finish line onto the field and began to shout at the campers at the very end of the line. "Come on, hurry up! You're letting the team down!" he howled. "Thomas, get moving!" Rudy raised an eyebrow. "Definitely a howler monkey," he said. "They make a habit of flinging dung, you know." The Cabin 13 team giggled and then turned back to watch the action unfold. Cabin 12 campers were arriving at the finish line now, red and sweaty, and were cheering their remaining teammates on. The last campers were just then clearing the ninth obstacle, the tires, and heading towards the wall. Tired, they struggled up the steep slope with difficulty, Chuck hollering at them the whole time from the sideline of the course. Finally, only Joe Thomas, the Cabin 12 chess champion, remained. He kept skidding down the side of the wall and getting tangled up in the net. Chuck was red with the effort of screaming at him. "Poor kid," said Mike, under his breath to Rudy. The camper looked terrified and miserable. "He looks like he's going to cry." Finally, Joe made it over the top of the wall and began clambering slowly down the other side. "Faster! Faster!" Chuck was yelling. Joe staggered to his feet as he dropped off the last part of the wall and began to run, panting breathlessly up the slope. The other kids in Cabin 12 were hopping up and down and screaming encouragement right up until he crossed the finish line. The crowd cheered as he collapsed into a heap just past the line, tired and pale under his tan. "The Cabin 12 team completed the course in 9 minutes and 26 seconds, called Sam through the megaphone. "Well done to Cabin 12. There was a huge roar from the crowd as the time was announced. "Cabin 13, will you take your places, please?" said Sam. Mike, Rudy, and the campers set off down towards the starting line in a tight huddle, leaving their flag at the finish line. "Everyone remembers what they're doing," said Davis, as they walked briskly to the flags that marked the start of the course. Mike nodded solemnly along with all the campers. "Harold," said Jimmy, who was carrying a backpack, "you doing all right?" Harold was limping badly, but was keeping up with the group somehow. "Yes," he said, his face white and determined. "I know what to do." Cabin 13 lined up at the starting line. "This is going to be so much fun," said Gabe, grinning, as he found his designated place at the front of the group.
"Cabin 13, are you ready?" called Sam.
"Yes!"
they all screamed back, waving at him.
"All right, then. On your marks. Get set!" he called, and blew the whistle.
Mike crouched down, and Harold got onto his back, piggyback style, wrapping his arms around Mike's shoulders.
"Okay back there?" Mike said, as he set off jogging towards the hurdles.
"Hang on tight!"
He jumped over the beams set just off the ground, aware that the rest of the obstacle course plan was kicking into action around him. Jimmy and Gabe, the two fastest runners in the cabin, were out at the front of the pack, clearing obstacles as fast as they could. Rudy was jogging along in the middle of a large phalanx of campers. Mike, carrying Harold, and Jason, one of the slower runners in the cabin, brought up the rear. The main part of the group hit the third obstacle. There were only two rows of rungs, and it had been a major bottleneck for Cabin 12. However, as Cabin 13 arrived, boys started swinging across the gap as fast as possible, while Rudy boosted other kids up to the top of the structure to crawl across the rungs behind them. At the other end, the kids on the top of the obstacle were helped down by their teammates. Meanwhile, at the seventh obstacle, Jimmy and Gabe had unpacked the backpack and were unrolling long sheets of plastic along each net-covered tunnel, before pouring out the contents of two big bottles of soapy water all over the plastic as they crawled through. Popping out of the other end, they ran on, Jimmy turning back for a moment to wave at Rudy, who'd run ahead of the main body of campers to the rope swing, to let him know that their objective had been achieved. Rudy waved back, and then swung across the pit. As the big group of campers jogged up, he took charge of the ropes, catching campers and swinging the rope back to speed up the process. Other campers simply threw themselves into the mud pit and waded across as fast as they could, helped out on the other side by Davis, or took a running leap at the pit if they were a bit taller. The whole group passed through in half the time that Cabin 12 had taken. Mike, breathing hard, arrived at the pit just as the last of the previous group swung through. Harold slid down from his back, grabbed a rope, swung across, and waited for Mike to hit his side of the pit and pick him up again.
"Foot all right, Harold?" Mike asked breathlessly as he jogged on.
"Yes, it's fine," called Harold, hanging on tight as they ran down a slight hill. The crowd was screaming as the main group of Cabin 13 campers arrived at the seventh obstacle. The first boy in line, Mark Fields, sprinted towards the long sheet of plastic leading onto one of the tunnels, threw himself down on it, tucked his head in, and moments later popped out of the other end, sodden and grinning. He leapt to his feet and ran off, followed by the other campers.
"I can't believe it's working," yelled Mike, as he and Jason, still somewhat behind, negotiated the second set of hurdles.
"I can't believe you didn't think it would work," said Jason, laughing. The main group of campers was soon running through the tires, muddy, wet, and grinning from ear to ear, Rudy once again at the head of the pack. He reached the bottom of the wall and bent down, his hands cupped together. As each camper ran up, he put a foot into Rudy's waiting hands and was thrown up towards the top of the wall. He climbed a few feet, then Gabe or Jimmy, who had been sitting on the top of the wall waiting, grabbed his hand and helped pull him over the top. Mike was tiring rapidly at the back of the group, and was relieved to take a short breather at the seventh obstacle while the boys slid through on their improvised slip and slide.
"I could run for a bit," said Harold, anxiously, as Mike appeared dripping on the other side.
"No, I'm fine," said Mike. "Just don't grab my neck, okay?"
Jason jogged just ahead of them as they ran on, finally reaching the bottom of the final obstacle where Rudy was waiting for them. He flung first Jason and then Harold up to the top of the wall, and saw them both over the other side before he and Mike started climbing. Harold, descending to the ground, found Jason and three other campers waiting for him. Stiffening his limbs and folding his arms across his body mummy style, he waited while the other boys lined up, to either side, and linked hands, then fell forward into their impromptu stretcher. Calling out marching instructions, Jason got them all moving briskly towards the finish line, Harold working hard to stay completely still as they jogged along. Mike was grinning as widely as any of the campers when he and Rudy hit the ground on the other side of the wall, and signaled Gabe and Jimmy to follow him. They jogged quickly up the slope, crossing the line just behind Harold and his assistants. Mike could hear Chuck screaming about cheating somewhere in the crowd, but ignored it in favor of grabbing Rudy's wrist to see how long their team had taken. 8 minutes and 45 seconds. He looked back toward down towards the course. Jimmy was sprinting towards the finish line, but Gabe was still at the top of the wall, scrabbling frantically with his foot.
"He must be caught in the net," said Mike, as Jimmy came through the line, grinning from ear to ear. Gabe was still struggling. "What should we do?"
Even as he said it, he saw a flash of light on a blade, and Gabe was soon sawing away at the ropes of his feet.
9 minutes, 10 seconds, shouted one of the campers. "Come on, Gabe," everybody screamed.
Suddenly, Gabe was slipping down the wall, jumping the last few feet, then breaking into a run as soon as he had his balance.
"You can do it, Gabe," Mike yelled. "Come on!"
Gabe put on an extra burst of speed and shot over the finish line, crashing into the rest of Cabin 13 campers.
"And Cabin 13 have finished the race in 9 minutes and 20 seconds,
announced Sam over the megaphone.
The crowd went wild. Davis picked up the beaver flag from where they had planted it in the ground at the start of the race and waved it wildly while the Cabin 13 campers all chanted,
"Long live the beaver! Long live the beaver!"
"Told you," Gabe was telling everyone. "I told you I'd be more aerodynamic without any hair."
Into this scene of jubilation broke Chuck, his face puce with anger and exertion.
"Cheaters! You cheated!"
"We did not," said Mike hotly, facing off to him. "All our campers made it through every obstacle in order."
"You were carrying one of them," Chuck bellowed back.
"He hurt his foot in the soccer game," said Davis, coming up beside Mike with Rudy. "He still made it through all the obstacles." Chuck ignored him.
"And you helped them," he said, poking at Rudy's chest. "You helped them up onto the wall. You let them build a slide under the nets."
"It wasn't against the rules," said Rudy calmly, brushing at the spot where Chuck had prodded him. "You could have done exactly the same thing."
"There was nothing in the rules which you agreed to, Chuck, to say you couldn't do any of the things Cabin 13 did," agreed Sam, coming up beside them. Chuck made a wordless sound of disgust and anger.
"Wow," Joe Thomas was saying to Davis by Chuck's elbow. "That was so cool. Did you guys practice with the slip and slide much?"
Suddenly, Chuck rounded on him.
"You! If you hadn't been so slow, we would have won. You should be thinking about that, not their cheating tricks," he howled.
Joe flinched back, his face crumpling in distress. Mike stepped forward and shoved Chuck as hard as he could, away from the two campers.
"You twit!" he screamed, pushing Chuck again. "Don't you dare yell at the kids. They all tried really hard today. Don't you dare!"
Chuck raised a fist, but the blow never fell. Bob had appeared behind him and wrapped one large hand around Chuck's wrist.
"I can break your whole arm with one finger," he rumbled threateningly. "You don't want to know what I can do with my whole hand."
Meanwhile, Rudy had dragged Mike back out of harm's way and had Mike's arms pinned down to his side.
"We really need to get you a better class of invective," he was saying, his voice amused. "You really can't just go through life calling people twits."
"Well, he is a twit," said Mike angrily, struggling to get free.
"Undeniable. He's also literally twice your size," Rudy said soothingly. "So try not to get too worked up, okay? Besides, your audience is already as impressed by you as they're ever going to be. No need to spoil it by getting pounded."
The Cabin 13 campers, Mike noticed as the red haze dissipated from in front of his eyes, were staring at him in stunned admiration. Self-consciously, he stopped struggling and shook off Rudy's arms as they loosened. He smiled weakly at the campers.
Sorry, guys," he said, going red. "I got a little carried away there."
Chuck had also been released.
"Don't think you've gotten away with this, Miller," he started, still furious.
"Oh, shut up, Chuck," said Rudy placidly.
"Shut up, Chuck," said Nick, from where he was standing with the Cabin 12 campers.
"I'm sick of you yelling at the campers and at me all the time. I'm going to ask John to move you out of my cabin. Maybe you can help him with the paperwork or something."
He crossed his arms and went to stand by Rudy and Mike. After a moment, most of the other counselors joined him. Chuck, stunned, opened and closed his mouth like a fish for a few minutes, until he finally said, "Fine!" in an angry voice, and stomped away from the field and the group of clones backing Rudy and Mike. Rudy moved away and picked up the abandoned megaphone.
"Off of Cabin 12 and 13, I would like to thank you for coming to watch today's events," he announced to the spectators. "I would like to conclude today's competition by sharing with you the immortal words of wisdom bestowed upon us by our founder, Elias Warden the First. All cats love jam. All boys love camp. And on behalf of the victorious Cabin 13, I would just like to add, long live the beaver."
It was Mike, as always, who started laughing first, but it soon spread to the campers and counselors all over the field, until all that could be heard on Camp Algonquin Island were howls of merriment.